For those of you who don't know me, my name is Eric Johnson. I'm a Unitarian Universalist Hospice Chaplain. And although I am unordained, I will be seeking a fellowship track, which I went to seminary at one of our two Unitarian Universalist seminaries. And when I graduated, I was involved in community ministry. And since then, the rules have changed. And to be ordained, well, I could be ordained, but to do it the right way, I guess, I will have to go back and jump through some more hoops. So I will be what's called fellowshipping very soon and engaged in that track. This sermon comes from something that I've been thinking about. In my job, I do a lot of traveling, and on a particular trip, I was traveling to Nashville, Illinois, and a thought came to me, what the hell happened? When I think back to the time when my kids were toddlers, things seemed easier, not as complex. And true, I'm middle-aged, and my life has become more complex with age and responsibility, and I have a lot more going on now. But I don't think that's it. Something or some things have changed, and not for the better either. It seems that every day brings more complexity, more crisis, more breakdown, and it's weighing heavily on me. I was thinking about these things a while back as I was driving to see hospice clients in rural Nashville, Illinois. That morning, I had attended an interdisciplinary team meeting, or IDT, where we all sit around a large conference table and discuss each one of our clients in a very formulaic fashion. This way, we all know what the other team members, like social work and nursing, are doing, and we can coordinate care. We spend a majority of time discussing where the client is within their particular disease process. For those, I thought I should go back right now, I just realized, for those of you who don't know what hospice care is, it is care for those who are within 6 months of, reasonably, of dying, of passing away. Many, if not most times, hospice clients can't speak or tell us what hurts or how they are feeling due to a variety of factors. Thus, looking for clues to tell the team where they are in the process is very important. How they are breathing, what are their vitals, their functionality, ambulation, are they feeding themselves, or are they total care? Are they making eye contact? Can the person smile or even take a joke? All very important questions. These can tell us where they are in the process, the disease process, so we can provide the proper care at the proper time, prepare the family, and eliminate suffering. So with the IDT process on mind, I started thinking about what I was experiencing, what I was noticing, and frankly, what was kicking my tuchus, with the same process-oriented rubric. And lo and behold, I found some symptoms that seemed to add up to maladies. Now, these aren't physical or medical maladies. These are spiritual, emotional, and in some cases, economic processes that have spiritual and emotional effects. Now, just a side note here, I'm a loving man, but I'm not a very studious man. Thus, I made up the names for these maladies and their symptoms. I'm sure that before I get home from teaching OWL this afternoon, someone will email me with the actual name for it and who wrote the theory. But for now, it's fine, and I prefer my own names, because I find it incredibly pleasing game to come up with this stuff on a long car ride. So here it goes. The first malady, Google-itis, a malady that causes guilt, shame, anxiety in a person who misperceives that because one can simply Google about anything, anyone, any procedure, that one can be expected to know, to be correct, or to perform a procedure correctly. This happens quite a lot in my household. I'll Google something, assume the information is correct, research it, and then be aghast when it doesn't work out the way that whatever it was reported it would. I read reviews, I watch YouTube videos, and even gather contradictory opinions, something my wife Marty taught me. What? What do you mean the vacuum's broken? It was highly rated in Consumer Reports. It had an excellent repair rating. I don't see any problems like this in the product reviews online, but bouts with Googleitis remind me that I don't have the control that I thought I did with simply more and more information. If anything, the end stage of Googleitis is the inability to discern or to even sort through all the data, which leads to inaction, or the opposite, to insist that the data is correct despite all evidence to the contrary, which I've been known to do. All that access to everything has a hidden cost to it. I think about my daughter's world and their future. Much will ride on their ability to sort and discriminate correctly vast amounts of data, and I don't envy them. I now understand the feeling my grandfather had at not being able to correctly work the VCR. Next one. Access and pacing disorder. This one kills me. The inability to control the pace or speed of one's life, or to control the access that others have to you. With the integration of cell phones and computing and the advent of the portable tablet computers, there is no hiding. There's no privacy, and a slower pace of life becomes very difficult. People can get a hold of me theoretically at any time, in any place, with a call, an email, Skyping, texting. This technological advance alone has increased the pace of life exponentially. Now, I'm constantly checking my phone, see, I have it right here, for texts, Facebook updates. I'm bad about checking emails, as Brenda McCoy and Mary Johnson will tell you. But still, think about how fast life has become. Think about how quickly you need to respond to other people. I can't even imagine a time of writing letters. Think about that for a second. Writing letters and waiting even a week for a response. I can't even wrap my brain around that now. Now, people get grumpy if the response isn't within an hour sometimes. Information technology and social media have sped up our world. Now, these two things have also brought us many wonderful things, don't get me wrong. But what I'm interested in is the cost. I remember when I was a kid, I was being criticized for many of the same reasons. In my father's day, I'm sure he was grumped at when he spent too much time listening to Captain Video. And this morning in today's service, we also found out about Captain Midnight. Does anybody remember Captain Midnight? Captain Midnight? Or there was Terry and something? Terry and the Pirates, yes. There we go. See, that's why you come to the early one. It's cool. You get to talk back. The quote that I think of is from Karl Marx, and it's against religion. It keeps going through my mind that religion is the opiate of the masses. Man, if he said that about a religion, I'm not sure what he'd think about Plants vs. Zombies or Angry Birds or the TV channels for everything. A smartphone or tablet in seemingly every hand, every waking moment. Just yesterday, we woke the girls up and went to the kitchen to put away groceries from an early morning run to the store. 30 minutes later, Marty and I looked at each other and said, "Where are the girls?" I went back to their rooms to check, and what did I see? The holy Kindle Fire tablets that they got for Christmas in their hands. Girls! Religion's got nothing on a Kindle Fire for addictiveness. Of course, you can't really threaten to take religion away and get the motivated preteen like you can a Kindle either. It's a complex world we live in these days, and truth be told, my kids' use of technology is not all bad. Meredith has an incredible knowledge of Monty Python, an old school British comedy, to rival her old man. She also loves listening to music on Pandora. Her appreciation of music outstrips mine, and I even have a music degree. I'm sure that her music lexicon is now outstrips mine. Lauren explores the realm of comedy and visual arts, looking and laughing at, I don't know if you've ever seen demotivational posters. Really funny. Luckily, they will navigate this world just fine. I can tell you that we've got great, great kids here in this church. They are developing skills that are new and adaptive to their world, and data discrimination and sorting skills, and incredible creativity. They mix cultural media and meaning like the finest painters. Their computation skills and ability to manipulate fine details and data is indeed skillful. Unfortunately, starting with many in my generation, we struggle with Googleitis and access and pacing disorder. We are unable to control our speed and directions, pulled and pushed here and there by variables out of our control, and even sadder, variables under our control. Our technological addictions have consequences that we are all too familiar with. But it's this fine and skillful manipulation of data and variables that I would like to bring up next. Let me give a few examples. Actually, let's go back and look at them as symptoms of a disease process and think about how many of these apply to you. Something breaks and you have to buy a new one. There isn't a place to repair it now. I was thinking about this yesterday, kicking myself for giving up the old Hoover metal canister vac which served my family for three generations. You could launch that thing off a skyscraper and it would be just fine. It worked great. And I so can't believe I gave that thing up. Income is stagnant, and every year at work comes with a new video about how your benefits have changed, which means how you're going to have to pay more for something and get less of it. You find the same things at the grocery store. Gone are certain vegetables, sauces, and the variety that you used to find. Now I have to go out of my way to find and get some things. Variety is decreasing. For Lauren's science fair project this past week, she was studying the environmental effects of overfishing and bycatch and things like that. And so we went to Deerbergs. And we looked at every single seafood product that we could find, over 160. Now, out of that 160, how many sea creature species do you think we found? Anyone hazard a guess?
Five.
No, not five. It was larger than that. Sorry, I led you up and then dropped your expectations. it was 22. But think about all the species of edible fish out there, and we only have access to 22. Next one. You get fewer things, less of it, and it doesn't last long. Razors, for instance, they don't last as long. I have to buy another one because I can't get the old cartridges. And this is not like I got it like 6 months ago, and now I can't get the little cartridges for it. Your money buys less and less. Quality in our products is getting a little bit less all the time. It's barely perceptible. Small cutting of corners all the time. And nothing is made in the U.S. You really have to work to find U.S. products. Even then, it's assembled in Mexico or a part of it came from China. Even our customer service comes from somewhere else. Don't take this the wrong way, but I highly doubt the customer service rep that I spoke to this week about getting a new power unit for my home computer's name was Russell. Look, I struggled through a year of Chinese in college, and buddy, I can guarantee your parents didn't give you the name Russell. You're from northern China, bucko, and I can hear the accent. Advertisement and marketing is becoming increasingly targeted, as well as political polling. Think of it, with this last political season, people were almost individually targeted. And that comes from a lot of advancement. Every time I get on the internet, I get assaulted by ads targeted right at me. How the heck did the computer know that I was just looking at Chicago Blackhawks knit hats? But it was a good price. It really was. These are just a few of the symptoms and effects of a disease process, which I call, my term, Quant's disease. For those of you who haven't heard the term quant, A quant is short for quantitative. A quant is a person who looks, who works with and manipulates quantitative data. The University of Chicago actually is the most famous quant school. Pollsters, investment bankers, accounting, and insurance actuaries are quant professionals. Quants use fine manipulation of data and numbers, math, to make slight improvements that, when magnified by quantity, add up. If I put 3 less Oreos in the package, then over 10-year time span, it will increase my profits by millions. If I reduce the quality by just a bit, it will save me millions and force them to buy new ones more often. If I cut benefits and hold off wages just a little bit, it will save me millions. If I ship the factory overseas along with the customer service, it will save me millions. If I manipulate marketing to reach more people in a targeted way, it will make me millions. If I contribute to these elections and they don't pass that legislation and pass the deregulation, it will save me and make me trillions. All for the profit of a tiny few. Next time you're out, look for symptoms of quant's disease. When you know what to look for, it's not hard to find. Tiny changes, big results when magnified. Mind you, it's not the individuals, the iBankers or actuaries, that hold my ire. It's what the process does that is robbing all of us. Cotton candyitis. When what we eat, what tastes wonderful, what we'd love to have, what we crave is not nutritious, but empty calories and making us fat, causing a further decline and suffering. Opiate to numb the pain and nothing more. I think many times of a favorite science fiction movie, The Matrix. How many of you have seen The Matrix? Great, good. Great movie. In this movie, the main character, Neo, is contacted by strange, omniscient, omnipotent-seeming people. But in reality, Neo is in the Matrix. The Matrix is an artificially constructed, computer-generated world which placates humanity. It was made by aliens who keep humans in battery pods and harvest the electrochemical energy created by humans. Thus, what Neo thinks is reality, this church service, me speaking, is actually simply a computer program as we all lay there creating energy. I know that's creepy. The other protagonists are outside the Matrix, but have the ability to plug into the Matrix to save gifted individuals and invite them to join the human resistance. To realize the cotton candy of one's life is to realize, as Neo did, that what we are experiencing is not reality. It's not really nutritious. It's empty. Or as Thoreau said in his day, if it proves to be mean, then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it. But I feel nourished here with you. I feel love. I feel care. I also feel frustration, burnout occasionally. And sometimes I feel annoyed. But I feel a reality, a fullness here in this church, a sense of temporary, imperfect truth with our faith, the Unitarian Universalist faith. I'd like you to take out your gray hymnal and turn to, I believe it's 4 pages in, to We, the Member Congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association. If you turn to that, how many of you have ever read this full page? Raise your hand. We're going to do it now. I'd like to do this. I'd like to read that whole page aloud. So here we go. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in our society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. The living tradition we share draws from many sources, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life, words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions which inspire us in our ethical and spiritual life. Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. Grateful for the religious pluralism which enriches and ennobles our faith, we are inspired to deepen our understanding and expand our vision. As free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust and support. Now then, I found that nourishing. I found those words have meaning. When I read these words, when I think upon these words, when I inculcate these words into my life and into my reality, I find that the effects of these newfangled maladies are eased, if not eliminated. When I seek justice and equity, acceptance and encouragement, I am not reducing others to their profit potential or to their manipulation potential. I am living deliberately, living really with them. And yes, sometimes it's not pretty. As a matter of fact, it's messy a lot. It takes longer to cook a good meal, to reuse the kitchen cabinets, to gather up the money for our missions. It takes a lot to teach our children or put on a kid's play, invite the hungry to a meal at our church. It takes a lot to scrounge for the personal care items for them because food stamps don't pay for them. It takes effort and time to live deliberately. But there is our answer. There is our pilgrimage, our journey to find what is holy, good, and real. I can't give you the answers in a sermon. Only you can give you the answers. This church is not an arena of spectacle where we come to be entertained intellectually and aesthetically. This church, I believe, is a temple of reality where we wrestle, where we rest and find refuge, where we share, and where we find love and life, messy and pure. I encourage you to join in the work of the church to engage, to try, to seek, and to find that good that I feel here in this church and in this faith of ours.